Hello and welcome to episode 46 of Good Copy, Bad Copy. I'm Emily King, Ranks' content marketing manager, and I'm joined by Fiona Keppel-Howes, founder and lead copywriter at Radix Communications.
Hello.
And Radix's creative director, David McGuire.
How are you doing?
In this episode, we are discussing writing B2B web copy. It's something that every B2B brand needs, but far too often it doesn't get the attention it deserves. If you've got any comments or questions about this episode whilst you listen, you are free, you know, to tweet us at radix.com.
We won't answer, obviously. It's not live.
Unless, of course, you tweet us during office hours and one of us happens to be checking our Twitter at the time and there's just this nice kind of like syncing up of events.
We just won't respond in this recording because that would be weird. We can respond in the next recording.
We could.
We'll answer your questions in the next podcast for sure.
So what is the nature of B2B web copy? You know, what sets it apart from the obvious fact that it's, you know, destined to appear on a web page somewhere at some point?
Well, I think for me, one of the big things about web copy in particular is that it's very much a reference sort of medium. In that people go to your website when they want something. It's like the yellow pages used to be or something. It's hard for a website to seek people out, to seek out an audience. And in combination with that, it's also this endlessly competitive medium because you have all of Google and, you know, however many, 6.5 billion or something. No, there are more web pages than there are people, I'm sure.
Yes, yes. And
it's just, you know, the back button is right there at any given time. So you've got people who are looking for an answer to a problem or a question, but they're also very, very flighty. You know, they don't have a great deal of tolerance for stuff that's not good, which is worrying because I go so far as to say that most B2B web copy is not good. I don't know if you'd agree with that or is that too much of a statement?
Is most B2B web copy not good?
Yes.
Well, I think what I would say is that a lot of B2B website projects are often done in a rush. There's quite often a very tight deadline and we want to launch the new website, in a month's time or in 3 weeks' time. And that gives us, I don't know, a week and a half to get the copy written. And so what happens a lot is that the copy gets written in a rush just to have the website ready for launch. And so not a lot of due thought and consideration is given to how that copy should be on the site. And I think that's probably one of the main reasons why B2B copy is often bad on websites.
It's possible. And that's even when people are investing in copywriters to get it done properly.
Yeah.
In some places it's just, you know, everyone write a bit about your department or something. You know, there is still some of that goes on, I think.
Yes, you get the sites that have got 4,000 pages because they've just sort of grown organically over time and everyone writing little bits and pieces as and when they're needed. And, you know, lots of it's out of date. And so, yes, there's a lot of that as well. But I think a lot of it is down to, especially at the moment, we're seeing a lot of websites being revamped because of, a lot of it's because of Google's mobile requirements. You know, the site has to be fully mobile optimized. Lots of B2B companies are revamping their sites in light of that, but trying to do it to a very aggressive deadline. And so they end up writing the copy themselves or giving the copywriters unrealistic deadlines. And so, yeah, and bearing in mind how important that copy is, I just think that people need to slow down. They need to think about how the copy needs to be on the site, give themselves longer deadlines and give themselves time to get it right.
That's the thing. It might be something to do with the fact that the copy sort of tends to fit fairly late on in a lot of web development projects. So sometimes, you know, you'll have a wireframe. Sometimes the design is basically done and you've just got to flow this copy into it. But by that stage, web. No one ever allows themselves enough time to build a website. I almost never can, apart from ours, I can almost never even remember a website that was launched on the date it was supposed to be launched.
Oh no, no.
You know, and because you're, but so by the time it gets to the writers, it's probably already slipping, and they're probably already trying to claw some of that back. Perhaps, I don't know. You know, maybe the writing should be happening in parallel with that other stuff. Maybe the writing should be earlier in the process, perhaps. I don't know. It's difficult because it's easy for you as a writer, you know, when you know what the page is going to be.
Yes.
But, you know, there are, you know, kind of content strategies and things that goes, no, no, no. Start with the words and do all the building and stuff when you know what the words are. Which, I mean, you might get, lovely words then. But it, sometimes it's difficult to start with that blank page.
It's very difficult to start with that blank page, especially with web copy, because what the designer has in mind might be completely different from what you are thinking the copy should look like on the page. So I don't know. I mean, there's different writers and designers have different preferences, don't they? But I always like to start with a wireframe and, you know, a rough idea of what these pages are actually going to look like before I start writing the copy for it.
Yeah, whereas I'm, you know, conceited enough to tell the designer what to do something, you know, put a box here and say that, you know, and I'm sure, you know, web designers up and down the country hate me for that. I'm sure, but you were right what you were saying about all the redevelopment going on at the moment. I mean, one of the reasons I think we're probably having this conversation on the podcast now is just that there's just so much web copy happening at the moment. So many people are looking at changing and updating their websites. I mean, I think our web copy is a portion of the projects that we do. I think it has jumped up 60% in the last year, and it has increased every year since 2013. So there's a lot of it happening, and hopefully that's an opportunity for people to get their web copy right and all of the old mistakes of B2B web copy, where we just got to shove something onto the internet, but they actually think about it and what it's supposed to achieve. This is the opportunity to do that thing.
And there is a lot of stuff that's just been shoved onto the internet that still sort of conforms to the old world of SEO. Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of old school kind of keyword stuffed content out there, and that's another reason for people to be revamped. It's not just the kind of mobile responsiveness, it's the fact that, you know, the things that Google rewarded 3 or 4 years ago are not the things that Google rewards now.
And it may, but maybe penalize.
Yeah, exactly.
So before recording this episode, a week or so ago, you, David, you decided to reach out on LinkedIn to sort of ask people for links to their favourite B2B web pages. And we're going to include links of what we discuss in our show notes over on our blog. But you're going to do sort of like a reaction on air from Fiona and myself, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay. Fiona and I have not seen any of these web pages.
This is just a...
This is quite frightening.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what you're going to say. It's okay. We can edit it out. Okay. So our first submission comes from Giles Shorthouse from the Octopus Group. And this is sent... without comment. Interestingly, I think almost everybody chose the homepage of a website, which we didn't specify. So this is grammarly.com. Fiona's looking pensive.
So what I'd say about this website, so this is Grammarly. I mean, it is a writing site, isn't it? So it's got to get it right.
It really has.
And, you know, the things that we're looking at on the homepage here are the things that we would classically look at in web copy. So is there a very clear value proposition? You know, this is the homepage of the website. Do you immediately understand the site you're on, what it's going to give you, and what you should do next? So I think that this ticks all of those boxes. So it's got a strap line there, or you know, value proposition, your writing at its best, and then a little bit of an explanation underneath. Grammarly makes sure everything you type is easy to read, effective and mistake-free. So there's absolutely no doubt as to what this website is going to do for you, the value that you're going to get. And then you've got a button under that that says add to Chrome. It's free. So you know exactly what you should do next, which is great. You know, you don't have to pay for it.
And if
you're somehow
not convinced, there's a learn more right at the bottom of everything there.
Yeah, and right above the learn more, you've got a quote as well. We've got social proof. No, it's from Forbes. Grammarly quickly and easily makes your writing better. Which again is a very well chosen quote, just all the lines.
Yeah. So I would say tick. Yes. Yeah, VG.
Absolutely. We should get a bell. Okay. The second one was recommended by Joanna at Copy Hackers. And she said, homepage headline for Topaz Remask is a recent fave.
Right, so Topaz Remask. Okay, I don't immediately know what it does, but it says it's got its tagline there, as easy as digital scissors, so I'm guessing it lets you cut things out.
Mm.
I did a bit of that, but with just generally in Photoshop earlier. It looks like it can get really fiddly when you want to select something in like an image editing program and they're trying to show because they've got some animation to go with their text here, that it's going to be really quick what you'll be able to do in comparison to what you normally do in Photoshop with like the basic setup. But I wouldn't say that the text necessarily easily conveys that's what it's up to.
If you didn't know what it was, then it's not immediately obvious what this site or this app does. But I guess you've been looking for something. You're generally going to have found this for looking for something, and so it's going to speak to the kind of person that is actually looking for something like this. As easy as digital scissors is a really nice piece of writing. It's a nice sort of mental image, nice bit of creative copywriting. The bit underneath says create precise selections effortlessly, which means nothing to me, but I imagine it would mean something to the kind of person that's looking for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, learn more, buy it for $69.99. See how easy it is to replace boring backgrounds with Remask. I think I did get straight away sort of what it is and what it does. I think the graphic helps as well. And I think you're right that if you were the sort of person that would use this kind of tool for their job, then that would make it really, really useful. I don't know. Personally, if I'm cutting out, there's a picture of a tiger here. If I'm cutting out a picture of a tiger and all of its whiskers, I would find scissors quite fiddly.
I
don't find scissors that easy. I love the creativity of the copywriting. Personally, I don't know. Maybe I'm just bad at scissors. I don't know.
I agree. Yes, I don't think I would find that easy to do with scissors.
But I might have used like a keyboard shortcut because stuff like Photoshop and that, there's loads of keyboard shortcuts for doing things, but you know, be like easy as and then a shortcut for what you would normally do.
Yeah, easy as control this, control that. Yeah.
There are two very clear calls to action here.
Yes.
So you get two buttons underneath. One is learn more for people like me that aren't sure what they're looking at, I guess. One, if you do know what you're looking for, there's just buy Remask for $69.99. So you're in absolutely no doubt. You can click on this and buy it. You know how much you're going to spend. You know, it's very clear. It's also a green button, which I understand draws the eye and makes people want to take that action. Yeah. So.
Now, our next one was recommended by Shelley Lucas at Dun & Bradstreet, who's become a regular contributor now. So, hi, Shelley. Yes. And this is a website that you may have seen before, Fiona. It's velocitypartners.com.
Oh, well, yes. Well, we're very familiar with velocitypartners.com. They are, in fact, a client of ours. So, Velocity's website has got a massive gadzooks in sort of white writing on red with a kind of blue spotlight. Gadzooks, it says, Velocity wins Agency of the Year. in very small writing in the Content Marketing Awards 2016. So you've moved away from that now.
Well, I'm just scrolling from that bit. So I can scroll up and down, but there's but then there's some content underneath.
I think it's
interesting with disregarding everything beneath the fold.
Yeah, everything we've looked at, all that information so far has been above the fold.
Mm.
So.
But actually, if you go back to that, well, it's a kind of above the fold kind of banner, isn't it? Mm. So what do you know from looking at that? You know that Velocity has got a very bold, different tone of voice.
True.
Massive gazooks with an exclamation mark, which is part of what they offer to their clients as well. So, they will help you find a kind of bold tone of voice to stand out from competitors. So so they're doing that for themselves as well. Velocity wins Agency of the Year in the Content Marketing Awards 2016. You immediately know that this is a content marketing agency and a good one because they've won an award. So, I guess it tells you a lot about what you might need to know about Velocity.
Yeah.
Very few words.
Then as you scroll, I think we've just disproved all of the UX people that say the fold no longer exists, by the way. B2B in tech markets move fast. The time it takes to say Groupon, your window of opportunity can slam shut. We like fast, and etc. I think, and again, that sort of very Velocity voice is kind of carried across into their, the sort of, I'm guessing sort of 30 odd word bit about what they do.
So what's interesting to point out about that is we talk a lot about show don't tell. And one of the examples we use is a lot of websites that you go to, people say, we are experts in this, we are experts in that. And you think, don't tell me you're an expert, show me you're an expert. And one of the ways to do that in web copy is exactly to do a first sentence like that. So B2B and tech markets move fast. It doesn't tell you we're experts in B2B and tech. It shows you what we know about B2B and tech markets. That in itself is just a little good technique for getting around that kind of show versus tell about how you're an expert in a particular area.
Okay, the next one was by, it comes from Sean Fleming of Enigma, moving swiftly on. Sean's given us a long description of what he likes about universe.consignor.com.
Oh my goodness.
E-commerce logistics is a topic I've written about for a few years now. You can think of it as everything that happens between you placing an order online and your parcel arriving. Warehouses and couriers are not the stuff of ripping yarns, at least not superficially, but this is the new KPI against which retailers are increasingly being judged by shoppers, the quality of the delivery experience. I like the universe of delivery site, that's what this is, universe of delivery, because it takes a non-standard approach to this topic. There are no warehouses, no pallets, no men in overalls. Instead, it just attempts to put a human face on a topic that can be too easily become dry and unapproachable. It's run by a company called, I'm assuming it's Consignor, C-O-N-S-I-G-N-O-R, who are lovely people, but may have me kidnapped for describing them as a delivery management software company from the Nordics. But there are worse places to be held captive than Scandinavia. They're also in China, Romania, and the UK, a real international success story. The other reason I like the universe of delivery is it's elevating the conversation away from the usual please buy our products and attempting a more considered approach. Sean's really given that some thought.
He has
Thank
given
you, Sean.
It a lot of thought. Well, from what I can see so far, I can't see an awful lot of copy. I can see some lovely photography and some very nice design and some nice colours.
Let's see what we've got. Complete. How we became the Amazon of the Nordics. I think it's lots of calls to action over pictures. Top five most read articles. City distribution. Return management.
So it's really like a content site, isn't it? What we might have called a kind of brand newsroom or something a couple of years ago. So it almost looks like an online publication with lots of really nice photography and sort of grid layout with different articles and pieces and kind of catchy headlines to get your attention. And then I assume if you click through, you get some content behind that.
Yeah, and they're all sort of how to and. and when to do this and how to do that. So it's all, you know, sort of useful information stuff. There's not a whole lot of buy our stuff.
Well, thanks to everyone who gave us some submissions to the Cove. Sorry we couldn't get to all of them, but they were really thoughtful and we like looking at them. Okay, so we recently released an ebook about writing web copy, which underpins a lot of the points being made this episode. It's got an accompanying video series too, you know, in case you're wondering, and there will be links in the show notes. But David, which are the most important principles of good B2B web copy? Like, if you had to pick a top three, because there's nine in the ebook
We do have nine sacred principles of badass B2B web copy, and all of them are sacred. You can't say some are more sacred than others. But I suppose I picked three tips that I think are quite easy to grasp and to work with. One is from the third sacred principle, which is perspective. And that's that, you know, your website is not all about you. And what I should say, the thing I particularly want to focus on is even your About Us page is not all about you. You know, it's about what you can do for the reader. Any information that you put on your website, if it's not relevant to the person reading it, if it doesn't make any difference to them, what business does it have being there? So every page, including, in fact, especially the About Us page, is actually about the reader as much as it's about you. So the second one I've chosen is from the fifth principle, which is empathy, which was something that Fiona touched on earlier, which is about Google. And these days, how we used to just think, you know, Google was king and we just write for Google. And now it's slightly different. We write for the people who use Google, which doesn't mean you can ignore Google at all. You know, just completely Google doesn't matter, but it's worth getting the search statistics and the keyword information and using that to take a reasoned, empathetic view about what that person probably wants, what page they probably need, and create that page and then trust Google to show it to them. And then reflect the fact that you've done that in your metadata. And the last one, just because it's really easy, from the ninth principle, which is patience, which is if you're writing like a whole website or microsite project, don't start with the homepage. Finish with the homepage, because the homepage brings you the highlights, the most important message. It summarizes and distills everything that is in the site. And that's a lot easier to do when you've already written it. So start on the leaf pages, you know, work on the detailed stuff first and work back through the branches to the root. And those are sort of the three, you know, easy to pot, easily potted tips, I suppose.
For our next episode, we'll be discussing writing for AI, virtual assistants, and chatbots. Hopefully, going to drag somebody else from the writing team onto that episode as well. If you've got any questions on this, actually, you're welcome to send us a tweet, or you could email us at info@radix-communications.com. You can even send us your questions in audio file. We've got experience in editing audio questions now into the podcast. So,
yes, it'd be nice to hear some people's voices.
But that is all we've got time for this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy. So you can follow and tweet us on Twitter at radix.com. And you'll find our website at radix-communications.com. And you can also sign up for our monthly email there for the latest copywriting tips and insights.
Cheerio.
Bye.